whether they're effective or they're not effective, in the grand scheme of things, the brand is shaped by so much more than the advertising and the influencers and all. It's like, it's everyone's responsibility in a business to manage the brand. It's just not like the marketing dollars. That alone is will not sustain your brand. It's everyone's responsibility.
Bonanza Growth Podcast, innovation, strategy, and UX for SaaS. Bonanza Studios is a growth consultancy for SaaS and fintech startups. Every SaaS business needs to fight in three different battles. First, product market fit, discovering a growing marketing and designing a compelling and undeniable solution to meet that demand. Second, product-led growth, turning your product into a growth vehicle by leveraging outcome-driven UX design. And third, creative marketing and organic brand building. If you're looking for a reliable partner to drive growth, check out our website at bonanza-studios.com.
Kurt, yeah, I don't know what to say. Thanks for coming on the podcast. I'm really excited for this.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So, you know, your resume goes a long way, all the way back to, I think, 30 years ago. So for a lot of folks that are listening to this, I think we can start a conversation from this point that you could just sort of like expand on your, you know,
on my background,
career, what you have done, how did you end up working with some of the, you know, Fortune 500, Fortune 100 like clients?
Yeah, well, you know, I went to school for graphic design, so my background is graphic design. That's where my education is. But since then, I've really broadened it much more to all types of design. And so that's, you know, the arc of my career has provided me lots of opportunities to work with great people and great companies and really great brands.
So how did you, like, if you don't mind, I would like to tap into a bit more, like, in your career journey. How did you go from being a graphic designer? Because a lot of folks are graphic designers. They want to join the product world, or they want to become a brand, brand specialist. So how did you make a transition from being a graphic designer to become a creative director? Because these are essentially two different skill sets and two different crafts.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really great question. You know, admittedly, I didn't know a lot about branding or marketing or, you know, as I entered the workforce. And VSA at the time when I joined was very small, probably only like 8 or 10 people at the time. And so the way we sort of entered that field, we were really a communication design firm and did a lot of book design, investor communications, a lot of corporate literature. That was sort of like what we were doing and early in the business. But I think that in very early days, we really displayed our strength of having just like great sensibility and kind of gut instinct on the expression of a business, right? The expression of a brand. And so very early days, we were doing a lot of kind of communication print things for Harley Davidson. And it was like, wow, well, if you guys could do this, could you do that? And if you could do this, could you do that? And so we were constantly being granted more and more permission. And what we realized early on was that we're really helping to push these brands forward, not just sort of follow guidelines, but actually take the brand and move it forward. You know, so new things and the evolution, the transformation that companies need to constantly go through, we're able to push them. And so very early on, you know, I think that that shift from being a designer to being a brand specialist was just something that was just sort of in our DNA, but we didn't really realize it until we were there doing those things.
It's sort of then something organic that as you started working with clients and like cover more of their needs, sort of market pull you towards that direction, right?
Yeah, I think it was the market kind of pulling us. And you're right, I think that's right. I think it was kind of a combination of both. It's sort of our willingness to kind of move outside of our own kind of comfort zone. You know, mm-hmm. we can, you know, there's no end to what we can do. And clients also saying, we'd like to see what you can do. So I think it was a little bit of both that, you know, creates just the right chemistry, the right atmosphere to allow that to happen.
So I would like to, first of all, congratulate you on your persistence. VCA Partner has been around for over 30 years.
Yeah.
As a recent, a fresh business owner that has a business in creative industry for about 3 years and a half, I don't have any words to describe how audacious it is to stay in the creative industry for 30 years and stay relevant and run a business. So maybe speak to that.
Yeah, you know, VSA has had a you know, quite the run. Actually, it's been 40 years. We celebrated our 40th anniversary at the beginning of this year. So it's been really quite the run. I think there's a, you know, it comes down to a kind of a couple of things, I think. You know, it's the founder of VSA, Robert Vogel, he had really, really strong business acumen. And so, you know, just the kind of discipline that goes into running a business was always sort of on the forefront and always sort of present, right? So it kind of starts with that. It starts with the desire to not view yourself as just an artist or a studio, you know, or, you know, makers of things, but rather, first and foremost, VSA is a business. Uh-huh. And so you have to treat it that way. You have to think, you have to, you know, and then you have to have kind of a level of entrepreneurialism that, right. you know, it, you know, you're the chase, the hunt, you know, you have to be also willing to like pivot and shift. Like, if,
that's right.
Like if you're doing something and for many, many years, our reputation was built on annual reports. And then all of a sudden one day annual reports go away, right? It's like, no one's doing them anymore. And then, so it's like, you have to be willing to pivot and kind of go where the market's going. Lastly, I would say that, you know, the business of design, the business of branding is a service business, right?
That's right.
And so in a service business, you have to be so passionate
yes.
about client relationships, your relationship. And so, you know, lots of people will say, do great work, right? And good things will come. Well, that's right. part of it, right? Doing great work. But I think that the most important thing is to build great relationships.
That's right.
And those relationships will sustain you, you know, at times when maybe business isn't so good. And it's also kind of a constant, I don't know, there's just something about collaboration
right.
and having that collaboration with clients, you know, earning their trust. Embracing their ideas, sometimes when their ideas are better than your own, mm-hmm. you know, it's, you know, so we've always prioritized relationships. So I think if you can do those things, you can really have a sustained, you know, company over time.
That's lovely. That's lovely to hear this, because I think a lot of new business owners in the creative industry, they are sort of like so sold on to, hey, let's just make a business, let's just scale it, get to a point, exit, or do whatever.
But
as you said, it's service industry is all about, it's a different beast than having just a software service product or like, you know, a simple transactional product. It's a very human intensive.
Yeah. It's not transactional at all. It's very like, you know, relationship building. And, you know, it's a people business. So you have to be a good people person.
Right.
And, you know, and sometimes it takes a lot of work and patience, you know, determination, empathy sometimes, you know. But, you know, you do those things and you'll have a very strong business.
Kurt, you've been in the industry for quite a while. You've have launched successful brands and campaigns when there was no internet, when everything was print, and you've seen how the I have an experience firsthand. I was a student back then, but you were in the trenches creating impact, and you saw internet became something pervasive and undeniable and unignorable in the daily lives of people. So you've experienced social media. You experience almost every major technological breakthrough since 1990. So I would like to reflect on how this new technological breakthrough impact the work of the world of branding and craft of creativity.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot to unpack there, but I would start by saying, so some of our very early relationships, I mentioned Harley Davidson, working with Nike and Converse, very lifestyle driven brands. And, I think the importance of designing and brand building for the lifestyle companies is really about kind of creating that total experience, mm-hmm. trying to make that consistent and delightful and educational across the board. So like pre-internet, there was things like just a lot of personal experiences. And I'll point to Harley, for example, because it's a very easily, relatable example. But so, if you're experiencing a commercial or an ad, right? You visit a dealership, right? If you don't know how to ride, you can participate in one of their educational riding programs. You purchase a bike, right? Mm-hmm. You accessorize that motorcycle. Mm-hmm. You take that motorcycle on a ride, right? And they call them rallies. You build bonds with other riders. Along the way, you're buying Harley Davidson clothes. You're joining the Harley Davidson, the club. They call it HOG, is the membership club. But so each one of these experiences, right, all contribute to the brand experience. And so we've had, for Harley, and it was right when they bought themselves back and they went public. So many, many years ago. But we had a chance to design all of those experiences, participate in all of that. And so that kind of collection of experiences is what, when I think of a lifestyle brand, it's the life, right? In lifestyle. Right. It's like what I'm living, right? Yeah. And so, you want those. Now, what the internet has done, right? It's done, many, many things. But for lifestyle brands, I think that, the internet actually exposed us to so much more, right? Right. So many more choices, so many more options. So what you realized is, if I want an American-made motorcycle, that's something now you can research. You can have one custom built by hundreds of different places. If you wanted special clothing or special parts and accessories, in some ways it made, I would say, it more competitive, right? You can do all kinds of research right now before you actually make your purchase. So, that ecosystem has expanded social media and, virtual realities and, now AI. It's like these are additional components when you think about that total ecosystem. And I think, some brands have done quite well with that, and other ones, I think have struggled. And, we saw the fashion industry for a while not really embrace new technologies, but they're all catching up now. But I think that I think it's had a really profound effect on brands. Also, you know, a point here I'd like to make is that the you know, with something as simple as the internet, it also brands became had to become more transparent, right?
That's correct.
Brands couldn't hide behind stories that they were telling, right? Now people could research, well, how where is this being manufactured? And what are those work conditions, right? You know, where is this stuff actually coming from? What materials are they using? Are they environmentally friendly, right? So just, you know, all of a sudden, as a consumer, you have a lens inside of a company that
That's correct. You
had not previously had before. So what are your employment practices? And what is your relationship with communities? What are your sustainability goals, right? I mean, what was once a company only had to report on its profits and its revenues, and now it's reporting on everything. And so that has had a very profound impact, I think, on brands, especially as, you know, that if you just compare the two eras, pre-internet and post-internet era.
That's a really good point. It's just basically, if I want to summarize what I've heard, is internet especially and social media increases the transparency around the brand and the way they go about to create that life for, so to speak, for their consumers.
Yeah, I think now people probably, you know, the way you consume or the way you relate to brands, a lot of it has to do with, do I share the same values as that brand does, right? So this is about, like, because you have the choice, because you have options, because you can buy anything from anywhere at any time from anyone, we make choices about what brands we want to associate with based on whether we have a shared value with that brand. Or do we see the world the same way they see the world?
That's right.
And so, you know, I think that that's, you know, it's very important that brands understand. And that's a lot of our work right now is kind of around purpose. It's like, what is your purpose? What do you stand for that's beyond profit and revenue? And that has to be articulated and experienced, you know, to the customer, with the customer.
One of the areas that basically what you're trying to articulate is purpose-driven brands. So whenever I talk to some of these folks that are like on the executive chairs and they talk about, sometimes I get this feeling, Kurt, that they're afraid of taking stand. They're afraid of drawing the line on the sand because they are very afraid of basically pushing certain folks away from the brand and pulling certain other folks to the brand. So how would you go about this resistance that you see in the executive rooms?
Yeah, no, this is a great point. You're really bringing up kind of a real meaty topic. It's kind of front and center right now. Yale is actually working on a program that's quite interesting. It's called like multi-stakeholder design.
Okay.
And so it's basically what you're describing, which is a company now today has to, you know, appeal to and work successfully with stakeholders across the board, right?
That's right.
From investors to employees to business partners, the supply chain. The you know, manufacturing, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, and oftentimes these stakeholders, you know, including customers, right, are like their needs are in opposition of each other, right?
That is right.
Some, you know, you've got customers saying, "Hey, we want you to be more environmentally friendly." Well, that might mean you have to change a manufacturing process or your supply chain, which could be very expensive, which reduces profitability. And that's what investors are looking for. Investors are looking for profitability. So you've got a business is constantly trying to manage all these stakeholders at once, and it can be challenging. And you know, Yale has discovered that, you know, most C-suite feel like they're not prepared.
You're right.
Right? Because this is the relatively new thing. And, you know, so, I mean, they have a pretty good theory right now, actually, brewing. It's really around constraints. So if you look at each of these stakeholders and you look at their needs or their constraints, what you're trying to do is you're trying to tie together certain constraints across that whole group and using those constraints as a way to innovate. And, you know, companies like Nike, I mean, there's insurance examples, there's manufacturing examples, there's banking examples of companies who are actually innovating and bringing new ideas, you know, to market, new products to market with this type of thinking.
Oh, wow. Okay. So basically, the definition that you initially proposed that, hey, let's just create a total experience for the consumers, now is getting expanded that says, okay, it's not only about creating that total experience, it's also about how we are producing that total experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how we're working together Well, you know, at one point, you know, you might think, you know, well, the customer is king, right? We have to service the customer and the customer's needs. But now it's so much more than that. So yeah, so when we build brands, coming back to that, we build brands with all the constituents in mind. And so the way we do that is that, you know, we find a real purpose. You know, we identify the thing that this company needs to stand for, and then we tailor that purpose for each of the audience segments. So even though they may have different experiences with the company, with the brand, we keep reinforcing that one thing, and that's what helps build brand over time.
Let's focus on that one thing, because I really want to take advantage of this next 20 minutes, 30 minutes that I have with you to sort of like elaborate on what is branding. Like, yeah. A lot of folks, especially with the advent of the internet and SaaS businesses and internet businesses, a lot of folks, you would think that it would create more clarity about what is branding and what is marketing that you need to do to promote that brand. But I feel like this word it's very difficult to define these words, these terms, in a world that there are thousands of articles about branding. So yeah. Based on my experience, Kurt, a lot of folks misunderstand. Let's just start from the marketing side, because that's a bit more clear to understand what is marketing. A lot of folks mistakes product marketing with brand marketing.
Yeah.
So that's a huge disconnect. And they think if I put money behind my paid ad, I'm actually promoting my brand, which I don't think is the case, but I would love for you to start from there. What is a brand, and how it is different to market a product versus market a brand?
Yeah. The wonderful thing, but also the challenging thing about the word brand is just like design. It can mean many different things to different people.
That's right.
A brand could imply, you know, a product. You know, this is a brand. But it could also imply like an idea, the idea of a company. And it does have like many different meanings. When I think of brand or branding, I think about just, it really has a lot to do with who are you, right? And having others answer that question. So as a customer, I'd say, well, you know, the Target brand is this, or the Tesla brand is this. It's like, in my heart and in my mind, you stand for something. And mm-hmm. the stronger your brand, the more clarity that a person has about who you are, what you stand for, what your values are. But also, it's like collectively, people have the same impression of who you are. So, you know, I think that, sometimes we work with brands who are like, we'll talk to different people and different people will say different things about that company, right? They'll say, oh, they stand for this or they stand for that. And it's and then someone else will say something completely different. And it's like, okay, there's no brand clarity here, right? Everybody has a different idea of who you are and what you stand for. When I think about brand and branding, I approach it kind of through that lens.
Right.
It's like through the eyes of others, who are you and what do you stand for? What are your beliefs? What are your practices? I mean, those are, I think that's how, and as I said before, different people have different impressions of brand, of what brand means, but that's, for me, that's my definition. And then like the difference between brand marketing and product marketing. Okay. That was another one of your questions. I think that brand marketing is like, here's a really, good, let me just try and think of another, of a good example here. Nike does this a lot with athletes, right?
That's right. That's right.
Right. And they'll Colin Kaepernick was, an athlete that Nike used in some, and I think that's probably, they're not trying to sell football gear, right? Mm-hmm. They're not trying to sell football cleats. They're trying to sell an idea about what the company stands for. And so, mm-hmm. Agree with it or disagree with it, it's sort of like everyone will have their own view of whether that was effective and whether it was appropriate, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a form of brand marketing. Or when Dove Soap, produces a campaign about what real beauty is, right? That's selling an idea mm-hmm. about what a company stands for. Now, they may say, Ivory soap, right? It's great on your skin. It moisturizes, it cleans, it does all this great stuff. That's more product marketing. Now,
right.
It does have an impact on the brand, but it's not brand marketing. It's, I think sometimes companies will cross over with that. But in my mind, brand marketing, you're trying to market an idea about who you are and what you stand for. And product marketing is really about the features and the benefits that you get from using a particular product.
So based on what I'm getting from what you're elaborating is that I don't want to call it average, but for the lack of better words, average brands trying to fill a gap in the market by saying, I have a better sun cream or that protects you from sun better than the others. But great brands try to fill a gap in a consumer's map of meaning. So basically, let us fill the void in that map, because essentially consumer navigate life using that map. Can you elaborate a bit more on how does selling an idea or purpose to a consumer will translate into consumption and sales?
Yeah. Well, I think it, there's, sometimes when we think about branding, sometimes I think about it as almost like love. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, when you're falling in love with someone, right? And you can't stop thinking about them, right? You think about them all the time, right? And boy, if a company, if they could have you think about that company all the time, right? That's a very powerful position to be in. Right? And so it's like, you know, you know what I'm saying? When you're falling in love with someone.
That's very powerful. That's why I'm saying, wow.
It's super, super powerful. And not only that, but guess what? You want to be spending more time with that person, right?
That's true. That's
so
right.
You're not just thinking about them. It's like, I want to spend time with you. And so if you think about that, you know, and I want to have more experiences with you. Right.
That's
so
true.
So when you think about love and you think about like branding, you think about brand marketing and the power of like, you know, being in the heart and the mind of a consumer, it's like you're constantly paying attention. So, you know, like, you know, there's a brand I really like, you know, it's called Filson. It's an outdoor, you know, clothing company. But it's like, I pay attention to what they say. So, you know, I may have Filson shirts, but when they introduce like a new Filson boot, well, I may get my boot or my shoes from some other brand, but because I pay attention to Filson, when they announce a new boot or some new footwear, I'm there learning as much about it as I can because I love that brand. Right. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Right. So if you're talking about like brand marketing can pull a consumer through up and down the portfolio of your offerings. Right. So use another example. I have auto insurance. Right. Well, my experience with the insurance company has been so good with my auto insurance. I might consider them for my home insurance now.
This is correct.
Right. I may not see a home insurance ad or you know, a social post or something advertising that. But maybe in my experience online, I've noticed that not only can I get car insurance, I can get home insurance. So brand love, like the love that you have in working with a company, either with a product or a service, it's like it can pull you through and then it can deepen your relationship. So I think that's the power of brand marketing. And I think that, you know, I think is there are some companies who can be very, very effective. I mean, look at J&J, Johnson & Johnson, right?
Yeah.
Most of their marketing is actually at the product level, right? Soap, toothpaste, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But every once in a while, they'll come out with more of an overarching J&J brand marketing campaign. And what it does is it sort of helps you realize like the role that they play in your life. Mm. And then so start considering other things that they have to offer.
Wow. I need a moment to really, like when you made that analogy, branding is like falling in love. Like when a branding done right, you sort of fall in love. So basically what you're trying to imply is that when you do the branding right, you give birth to a character that is sort of similar to a human. It's a living thing, right? Yeah. So let me go on that path. If I want to fall in love with someone, means that I need to see something in them that is unique, that is music to my ear, that is, you know, strike something deep in me that I don't understand. So when you approach new clients, and often it's the case, based on my experience, that they are not aligned, as you said it as well earlier. Every stakeholder says something else about the brand. How do you go about this to sort of like create a character that is approachable, that is lovable by the market?
Yeah. Well, I think that you know, as human beings, you know, we probably all look for something different, you know, in our social circles and our families and so forth. But I think that, you know, in terms of building a character, a persona, you know, or a, you know, a presence about a company, you know, I typically do it by looking at just two things. It's very, very sort of simple exercise. And the first is, like, what is authentic to you, right? Uh-huh. Like, mm-hmm. What is, like, so authentic? Only you do this. Only you can say this. Only you offer this. You know, only you have this type of history. You know, it's like trying to figure out, sort through all of the clutter and all the noise to, and distill the company and what's uniquely you. Mm-hmm. That's one part of the equation. The other part of the equation is, what makes you relevant today?
Uh-huh.
And so that exercise, and by what I mean, you know, what I mean by relevant is, you know, is it meeting the needs of people today? Mm-hmm. Is it showing up in ways that people actually care about? You know, is it putting meaning into their life, right? Like, I can make that connection. So authenticity, or what makes you authentic, and then also what makes you relevant. Those two things together are the basis of building a really powerful brand, or as we were saying before, a character almost.
Mm-hmm. And this authenticity could be that, for example, they've been known to delivering safe cars.
Yes.
Like, for families. We know that, what brand is that? Volvo or Toyota. These are like really safe cars. Everyone knows it. Like in Europe, if you want a safe car for family, you go for Volvo. I mean, yeah. I think it's market by market, region by region, is different. But basically, certain brands manage to sort of capture certain adjective or certain qualities that their brands are always associated with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, we do a similar exercise as well. It's like, if your brand, you know, if you were to grossly oversimplify your brand, what you have to offer, it's down to a single word. What would that word be? And, you know, for companies like IBM, we do a lot of work for IBM. I'd say it's progress, you know. For companies like Harley Davidson, it's freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, for other companies, it's reliability or trustworthy, or, you know, in the online shoe company Zappos, it's customer service, you know? So it's, you know, it's a good basis of trying to, like, get your brand down into a single word. And cars, you know, as you pointed out, Volvo, I think Volvo's a good example of, you know, the Volvo has always sort of stood for safety, and they've owned safety. But I think along the way, there have been periods of time when the car design hasn't seemed very modern or contemporary, or it's not meeting my today's needs that I look for in the styling of a car. And so I think for a while it kind of lost. Now, the new Volvos, I think, are quite nice, and I think that they're showing up much better. I would imagine sales are stronger today. I haven't researched this, but, you know, you see it, you know. That's why I think both of these things are important, right? Not just one or the other. You have to look at what's most authentic, and then you have to show up in a way that is meaningful today, right? That people care about, that they take notice. And, you know, I think that you see this in cars are an easy example of that, right? And it's also an interesting one, too, because there's such a long product cycle in order to bring a car to market, like once it's designed, so that's, I mean, the automotive companies, I think, have always been challenged in that way.
And it's interesting too, because I really like that simplification of a branding activity, or how you give birth to a brand. Is like, what is authentic to you, and what is relevant to today consumers, and how you can sort of like, how can you help meet the needs, meet the things that relevant to the consumers with what you can offer.
Yeah. And it's, well, you know, what's really actually kind of cool about that is, you know, different companies take different approaches, right? So some companies will be out there constantly benchmarking, or they're talking to customers all the time, asking them what they want in terms of features or functionality. But then there are other companies. I think Apple is a pretty good example of this. I don't actually know how much like customer research or insights they do that would help drive their product design. But from what I know, or what I can, you know, what I've heard, is that Apple doesn't take that approach. You know, Apple doesn't go ask the consumer what they want and then they bring that to market. Apple is really steering culture, behaviors, preference by just being so innovative and anticipating what, you know, human beings want. Not by asking them, but by thinking about, by kind of solving for, you know, perceived, you know, or anticipated future needs. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So companies kind of approach it in one way or the other. But I do think that, you know, need based, like, you know, what do people want? You know, what, you know, how is it, you know, differentiated? How does this thing benefit me more than other things? You know, sometimes we, you know, the other thing about brands, is that, you know, we have a kind of a proprietary kind of a research methodology called promise to performance. And promise to performance is a really interesting sort of example, kind of tangent on the kind of that, you know, what's authentic and what's relevant. It's not that different. It's sort of similar, but brands make promises. Okay.
That's right.
Right. They say you're going to get, you know, if you're, let's just use airlines, for example, right. Brands will make promises and they'll say, boy, if you fly United Airlines or American Airlines, you're going to have the most amazing experience. Now, it's going to cost you more to fly on one of those two airlines, but it's going to be worth it, right?
Yes.
Now, when you don't have, so that's the promise part. But when you don't have a great experience, right, that's how you perform. You make a promise, and then based on your performance, that's where people start to get an impression of the brand. Are you over-promising? Because my experience was, you know, was not that good. Or maybe you're a Southwest Airlines, right? Or a Spirit Airlines. And you're saying, or they're saying, low cost. You're not going to pay a lot for this ticket, right? But we're going to get you there. And so you can actually have a stronger brand experience with a company that better aligns what they promise to what the actual experience is. And it's not about going up in price. It's right. About, you know, it's not about being more and more premium. Your experiences get better and better. It's about trying to align what you're promising the marketplace and what that actual experience is like. And that can build, the closer you're aligned, the stronger uh-huh. that brand bond becomes, because you're delivering on what you're saying.
Oh, okay, got it. So basically what you're trying to imply is like, you don't need to overpromise. You only need to deliver on what you promise, and it doesn't matter if it's one or two promises or like 10 promises, as long as you can do a good job delivering on the promises that you make to your consumers, you have a good alignment and balance between your promises and delivery, and that makes up for a good total brand experience.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's like, you know, that's why, you know, I mean, you know, as consumers, you know, we do this a lot. You know, maybe there's a brand that, you know, we love, but, you know, over time, it's like, I don't know, like, it's not really delivering on what it had, you know, promised me, you know? And so at that point, maybe I'm out looking for another brand to buy or another experience, right? So, you know, I think it's, and that, you know, when you think about that, okay, branding in general is a very foundational thing. People don't reevaluate their brand every year like they do, you know, their marketing, right? Their marketing has to change quarterly, yearly, maybe daily if you're on social media, right? But when you're building a brand foundation, you do that once, you know, every couple of years, right?
That's
you don't
right.
do that all the time. And but that brand experience, I think I kind of lost my thought here. But that brand experience is something that, you know, you have to constantly reinforce.
Right.
And so right. you do it once, but you reinforce it. You have to keep reinforcing it all the time. And, you know, you have to keep in mind, like, all these experiences, you know, like call the call center. What is it like to, you know, get my appliance repaired, right? That's as big of a brand experience than the experience of going to the store to buy the appliance.
That's right. right. 100%.
You know, so there's a foundation. And then there's this constant maintenance of the brand, you know, constantly trying to reinforce it and maintain it.
I wish we had another 200 minutes that we could go back and forth on the branding. Yeah. It's such a privilege to have you on, like, and tap into 2 years of experience you've had, Kurt, with and working with big brands. As sort of the outro, I'm very aware of your time. I would like to just maybe like say a factual report that I read recently, and I get your reaction to it, and we can end with that.
Yeah.
As Metadata.io is a operating system for running marketing activities. And they look into 40 million spent on all marketing activities, which surprisingly 38 million of it was about ad spend. And they realized that out of 38 million spent, only 22 million drive contracts and drive, you know, revenue. So that's 18 million deficit in how you yeah. spend on your marketing activity, especially ad activities. Yeah. What's your reaction to this? Because I think it's a groundbreaking data that just published recently.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. We were just having this conversation yesterday about, you know, how much should companies be spending, right? I think that my reaction is that brand, the responsibility of brand management is not the marketer's. Marketing primarily helps to manage it, but it's everyone's responsibility.
That's right.
To manage a brand. So branding oftentimes gets like siloed into marketing. And so they relate marketing dollars to brand effectiveness or brand health, right? And it's brand health is so much more than the dollars that you spend to advertise, whether they're effective or they're not effective. In the grand scheme of things, the brand is shaped by so much more than the advertising and the influencers and all. It's like it's everyone's responsibility in a business to manage the brand. It's just not like the marketing dollars. That alone is will not sustain your brand. It's everyone's responsibility.
I could not think about a better way of ending this conversation. Thank you, Kurt, for sharing your knowledge, experience, and time with me. It's been a valuable, valuable 50 minutes. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Barak. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And if there's future episodes that you know, you'd like me to participate in, I'd be happy to.
More than happy. I'll call you up on that. Ciao. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode. For more information, go to bonanza-studios.com.